Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time again for another episode of OC Spotlight. The one show, maybe the only show, that shows you the most incredible people doing the most amazing things. And today, well, it's one that's near and dear to my heart. I'll slip in and out of my bed brogue once in a while here. We're going to do a sip of Irish whiskey, all in regards to a film that's showing this weekend called A Sip of Irish at the Newport Beach Film Festival. Joining us is the director and producer of that film, Frank Mannion. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me on your show, Paul. I'm really sad to be missing out on the whiskey festival. It sounds right up my street.
That's it. Well, tonight, for those listening, we're doing, as we've promoted all week, the Orange County Whiskey Festival takes place in just a couple hours here over in Irvine, right in front of Boss Cat Restaurant and all the other big restaurants there. And first of its kind, and I thought, what is this? Just my, I'm a good Irish Catholic. My wife would say, "See, it's God speaking to you, boy." Well, she wouldn't say it in a brogue, but she'd say it's all the hand of God working here. I don't know if it is or if it's just the luck of the Irish, but we two talks about Irish whiskey in 1 week. That's I'm in heaven.
Well, for sure. And you know, whiskey is actually the derivation of an Irish word called Ishka Baha, which means the water of life.
Yes, exactly.
So certainly, we've given the water of life to millions of people around the world. So I'm delighted that you're doing it in Orange County in Irvine in a couple of hours.
So give us a little background, first of all, on you and how you got to make this documentary about specifically Irish whiskey, and then we'll talk about whiskey in general a bit. But who are you and how did you get into this project?
Well, yes, I mean, I'm an Irish, you know, director and producer, and this is actually the fourth film that I've directed. The first film I directed also had an alcoholic leaning. It was called Sparkling. It was called Sparkling, the Story of Champagne. And as its name suggests, it was about the origins of champagne. Did Dom Perignon, the monk, actually invent champagne? He supposedly said, come quickly, I'm tasting the stars. So
because he didn't realize that was sort of an accidental discovery for what little I know of champagne. They weren't planning to make it. It just sort of happened.
That's right. That's right. And it's a wonderful marketing story, but it is a myth. But so we debunked that myth in Sparkling, the Story of Champagne. That film was very successful. It had a quite a wide release in the States. And, you know, three other films in, I thought, you know what, I've, you know, traveled the world, you know, with my films. And the number one question everyone asks me when they find out that I'm Irish is, oh my God, you know, I love this Irish pub in Irvine, or
yeah,
I love this pub in Newport Beach. And I realized that actually, you know, we are stereotyped around the world for good reason, as being a nation of good drinkers. And I wanted to sort of look at that self-stereotyping and look at us and look at actually our products and our drinks, from whiskey to stout to Guinness, even to wine and Bailey's Irish Cream and Hennessy Cognac.
Right.
And that's where the idea came from, literally, you know, traveling and being told everywhere, you know, where people's favorite Irish pub was, or whether their relatives are from Ireland or they just been to Ireland to visit. So it was really an exploration of that. And actually, we have been so successful exporting ourselves. There are 82 million people of Irish heritage around
sure
the world.
I'm one of them, yeah.
You're one of them, Paul, and 32 million others in America, and 3.3 million Californians, according to the last census, have Irish heritage. So that's quite a big constituency, which probably explains why every American president apart from Trump has claimed Irish heritage,
yes,
going back to John F. Kennedy.
That's true. Right.
It helps in an election year to have 32 million potential voters looking favorably at you.
That's for sure.
So, you know, of course, there's a big Irish whiskey Scots debate. You know, just before we came on air, you were telling me that, you know, when you ran your bar, that Scotch and bourbon were the sort of the two best
Everybody
sellers.
went to, nobody went to, we try and give them the Bushmills or the Jameson. Nobody wanted to try that. So that's not whiskey. Whiskey's Scottish. And yet whiskey, did whiskey start in Scotland or did it start in Ireland?
Well,
Or both?
you'll have to see the film to realize
Well,
that, but
we'll keep the cliffhanger for those who want to learn.
no, but I'll give you the spoiler. We actually invented whiskey, and we unearthed documentary evidence in the film to show that Ireland were definitively making whiskey at least 90 years before the Scots. We
There
have
you
written
go.
evidence going back to 1405, the 15th century, that we were distilling whiskey, which irks the Scots
To no
no
end.
end.
The other
But
debate is they
really,
have to spell it differently. Why did they take out the E? In America, it's spelled Whiskey, the same in Ireland, but the Scottish have to be different. They take the E out of there, if I
well,
understand it correctly.
that's the illiterate, you know, whiskey makers back in the day, you know, so
We're going to get a lot of angry Scots calling us here, but that's okay. It's a debate worth having here. I
well,
tell
I
you,
mean, yes,
go ahead.
sorry, go
I
ahead.
was just going to say that I tell you, my family, my great grandfather came from Ireland in the famine, as so many did in the 1840s. And of course, what did he do? He was not to tell a long story, but he was born on this famous boat. I guess the Jeannie Johnston. He was born in that boat. Fleeing, and I guess that's now in the Dublin Famine Museum and all stuff. And anyway, I didn't know it came from such heralded lineage because my grandmother, when she told me the story about her father, she was ashamed. Oh my goodness, just the drunken Irish. And of course, when he came to America, when grew up, what did he do? He started a bar, and that theme has run through. I had a bar, and it's run through our family and stuff here. And I don't know where the stereotype comes from, if it's true, but my grandmother used to love to say, I'd see her drinking a little bit of. She could slip into the brogue better than I could. And I'd say, Grandma, are you drinking again? No, just a wee bit for me cough. Just a wee bit for me cough. You know, it's Guinness. It's what's good for you. It's good, what good for ails you. It was seen as when you were a little baby, they give you a little, if you were crying and had teeth coming in, they'd give you a little whiskey and put it on your gums here. To them, it was
Well,
magic.
I mean, well, whiskey is still seen as medicinal in Ireland, and what your grandmother was doing is no different from everyone I know who, you know, you're going to bed with the threat of a cold or chest cold. You would have what's called a hot toddy, you know, which
Yes,
is
right.
you know, with a whiskey, with Irish whiskey. But you know, going back historically, you know, what you've just alluded to there is that, you know, historically, there was such a wave of Irish people emigrating to the States decade after decade from the 1840s onwards.
Absolutely.
So by prohibition, just before prohibition, Irish whiskey was actually the best-selling whiskey, much bigger seller than the Scotch, and it was
Really?
actually
That's amazing.
most you know, it was the most prestigious whiskey in America by a long shot, you know, led by, you know, the passion of Irish migrants to the States. But what happened during Prohibition is that whiskey would get, or moonshine more like it, would get imported from Canada, and because Irish whiskey had such a good reputation, the sort of counterfeiters would pretend that it was Irish whiskey that was being imported. And actually, it began to give the Irish whiskey a terrible reputation. And that was part of the downfall of Irish whiskey. The Second World War was also the part of the downfall, because a lot of American GIs were stationed in Great Britain and
My dad, for
developed a,
example, my dad fought in World War II as a
well,
bomber pilot.
and developed a fondness for Scotch whiskey because Irish whiskey wasn't sold in great numbers there. And the two sort of combination of prohibition and the development of Irish whiskey, fake Irish whiskey, and then the wave of GIs coming back from Europe with a fondness for Scotch left us for dust until very relatively recently.
Well,
And
I would say that explains it because my father, who was a bomber pilot in World War II, came back. He would only drink Scotch. He would not drink Irish whiskey. And so I didn't see, the whiskey was found in our household, in my family's household extended, but not rarely or never Irish whiskey.
Yes, well, that's changing now because for the first time ever last year, Irish whiskey and other drinks exports, you know, including stout, reached $1 billion,
Oh my goodness.
Which is enormous for a small country of 5 million people. But interesting, if we're going to continue this Irish versus Scotch whiskey debate, your great president, Donald J. Trump, the world's most famous non-drinker, as you
Right,
know,
right.
has put a 15% tariff on Irish whiskey as part of European Union tariffs.
Right.
So Irish whiskey has a 15% tariff, whereas Scotch whiskey only has a 10% tariff because the UK did a separate deal. So already, just as Irish whiskey is inching ahead with Jameson and Bushmills, suddenly the Scotch whiskey have a 5% price advantage in the US because of these tariffs.
Well, what I always liked about, as I grew and developed and tasted more whiskeys, I did like Irish whiskey. And I have to ask you a question here, because I'm a good Irish Catholic. I was always told by those in the know that between the two, there were two big ones for many years, just Jameson and Bushmills, that if you're a Catholic, you got to drink the Jameson because that's made in the South. And if you're Protestant, you got to drink the Bushmills. Is that true, or is that just another fairy tale that I've heard from too many Irish?
Well, historically, that might have been true. But for certainly the last 25 years, I think Irish people appreciate quality regardless of whether it's north or south of the border. So, but that it was the reason, one of the reasons why that was perpetuated was in a very successful Martin Scorsese movie called The Departed.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's Jack Nicholson's character who says that he wouldn't drink Bushmills because it's, you know, the Protestant
whiskey. The dirty Protestants drink that, right?
Yeah. So it's stuff like that that has an impact. And going back to films, you know, A Sip of Irish, as you said, is going to play at the Newport Beach Film Festival, which I'm absolutely delighted about. It's screening at 6 p.m. On Sunday the 19th.
Yep,
I'll be introducing it. And there is an after party at Muldoon's, which seems to have a very, very large selection of Irish whiskey
huge.
And stouts. So I hope you and everyone else will join us.
Well, the other thing I've seen then through the years is certainly there has been a rebirth of whiskey in general as a category. My bar in the 90s, we didn't sell that much brown goods, but all that stuff has taken off more. There's now whiskey festivals like this in Orange County. There are whiskey bars like Boss Cat and Eureka and some other places. They have huge selections of whiskeys. And what I've seen and tasted and experienced are this exploding surprise of Irish whiskey. Things like Redbreast and Greenspot. Talk about that. All these distilleries that have popped. Maybe they have some ancient lineage, but it got shut down during the Prohibition years, and they're reopening or reimagining or rebuilding. It seems like there's been an explosion of what should we call them, artisan boutique distilleries.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for just after World War II, there was only three distilleries left in Ireland, and Cooley Distillery, Bushmills, and Jameson.
Right.
And it was only until the 1980s that another distillery opened. Now there are 40 distilleries in Ireland.
Wow.
So that's an incredible achievement in itself. So, you know, in the film we interview Prince Albert of Monaco. He says he's patron of the Monaco Irish Whiskey Society.
And who knew?
And you know, Middleton is perhaps
Middleton,
his
brother, yes, right.
But Teeling whiskey is also a favorite of his. Mm-hmm. In the film, we also interviewed the dancer Michael Flatley, you know, Riverdance and Lord of the Dance. He's just set up his own Flatley whiskey, which is launched and is excellent quality. So there are all sorts. But going back, there's a Californian connection to Greenspot whiskey, which is made by a Jameson blender led by a lady called Deirdre O'Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
And the California Californian connection is this: Chateau Montelena, which is a Napa Valley winery, is owned and run as a family business by the Barrett family, by Beau Barrett. And his grandparents were actually from Ireland, from Kerry and Waterford. So on a visit to Ireland, to Cork, he was giving a talk on sustainable farming. And the blender from Middleton Whiskey was there. And he said, look, we do Green Spot whiskey here. Why don't we do Zinfandel barrels from Chateau Montelena that'll give this sort of sweetness to it? So now you can buy, you know, limited edition Green Spot Chateau Montelena, as in it's been aged in Zinfandel barrels from Chateau Montelena, and it's very, very popular. And it's got amazing reviews.
And that aging in the barrel is really where the flavor comes from, right? If I'm not wrong.
That's right.
The color and the flavor,
By law, or under sort of Irish whiskey regulations, you have to have it for 3 years in a cask. And that they are the you know, so that's why 3 years in a Zinfandel cask or French oak or whatever, you know, it does give you an opportunity to experiment, you know, with Bushmills have been experimenting with sherry.
That's the one I've tasted, sherry casks, right.
And so, as you said, you know, Paul, there's a lot more variety and innovation and artisanship, I would say, in Irish whiskey and also Scotch whiskey as well at the moment.
Yeah, no question about it. And to the point where Scotch whiskey has taken over the palates of people all over the world. The Japanese, I'm told, love whiskey in a big way. Other countries, Asian countries especially. I don't know how they adapted to it or found it, but this product from the aisles up there seems to have become the hot category. I think it's the next big thing. Maybe I'm overstating it. I know we're in Southern California. Tequila's huge. Gin started to make a comeback a little bit, but I think whiskey's having its moment right now here.
Well, I hope so, because, you know, there's a lot of care and love that goes into it. And, you know, because you can't sell the product for 3 years, you know, it is the bane of the accountants. And in fact, at Jameson Distillery in Cork, they've worked out, you know, they have something like 15 million barrels at various stages of development. And they work out that each day, the equivalent of 57,000 bottles evaporate because of what they call the angels.
I was going to say that. I thought only the Irish would give a fun story to a natural process. It's the angels' share. They're sipping it as it sits there.
That's right. And you know, when you go into these distilleries, you know, because we filmed at Bushmills, we filmed at Jameson and a couple of others. I mean, if you're unused to it, you can be knocked out by the potent smell of alcohol.
No need to sip it. Just go experience it and walk through the building. Huh?
No, really, it is quite extraordinary. I don't know how they function in that environment 12 hours a day.
Last question. Tell me, I don't really fully understand. Irish has one variation that I read about a lot, but don't really understand. What's a pot still? And how is that different than normal whiskey production?
Well, you will have to watch the film, Paul, to find out, because the opening shots of our sequence at Jameson has a shot of the world's biggest copper pot still.
Okay, all right, good.
And which had to be wooden, you know, fired by wood to distill, to start the distilling process. But it's too long to go into it now. I'd rather your listeners watch the film. And in any event, after the Newport Beach Film Festival, it will be screening in cinemas like the SLO Film Center in San Luis Obispo.
Oh, sure.
And it will be on digital platforms like Apple and Amazon Prime from October the 28th.
Well, everybody should watch it, because it's the forgotten story of whiskey, where whiskey really comes from, and the care and the love that goes into it and the culture built around it. And the explosion of interest in it in the last few years, as Ireland and the rest of the world has rediscovered this artisan, this ancient craft, this part of the culture forever, and is now presenting it to the world. through products like those we named, through the bars that we've rattled off here, and through films like this. Thank you for documenting it, because I think it's a story that hasn't been told for too long. It wasn't a story told in my family, for Pete's sake. So I'm eager to share it, not just with my friends and family, but with everybody who listens to this show here. Thank you so much for coming on here. Frank Mannion from A Sip of Irish, premiering? I assume it's been shown other places already.
Well, it's the North American premiere, yeah.
There you go. North American premiere of this wonderful documentary about the breath of life, a wonderful product we call whiskey, right here on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.